Welcome to the Small Batch edition of Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. I am here in the studio today with a very special guest. Her name is Sarah Wendell. Sarah, what do you do when you're not on Small Batch editions of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour?
I am the co-founder and current mastermind of Smart Bitches, Trashy Books, a blog devoted to the romance novels.
You know, some of you have heard us talk about Sarah and Sarah's work on the show before. We figured it was a good time to bring in Sarah to have a little chat about what exactly she does over at Smart Bitches, Trashy Books. This is the question that I've always wanted to ask you.
Uh-oh.
How many books do you read in, say, a month?
It varies. I usually read, on a good week, 2 to 3. So anywhere from 8 to 12 books a month. Sometimes I'm in a novella kick and I want to read shorter books. Sometimes I read a whole bunch of category length, which are the Harlequin books that you'll see that are a little slimmer. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes I want to read the whole series of something and I dive deep into someone's backlist and I'm gone for many, many weeks in the 1800s and I'm very happy.
How much are you able to read the stuff that you're actually interested in versus stuff that you think, well, this is something that for work I should pay attention to? Are you able to follow your heart or no?
Absolutely. One of the nice things about romance readers is that while we are very devoted to the genre, we also love a lot of other things. And the thing about the romance genre that I don't think many people know is how many different kinds of romance there are. So there's contemporary romance and historical romance and science fiction and fantasy and futuristic and romantic suspense and male-male. And there's all of these different options. So whatever it is I feel like reading fiction-wise, I'm probably going to find a romance in that particular flavor.
What have you learned about kind of romance readers from spending a lot of time with them? Because I get the sense, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I get the sense that romance readers drive a lot of the money, not just in genre work, but in publishing in general. They remain a major source of funds for all books.
I don't know, honestly, because the books that sort of take over the world every so often, those seem to drive sales for an entire company for like 2 or 3 years.
Sure.
So I think that romance is a perennial seller. I think that it always has an audience. The thing that I've noticed most about romance readers is that they are some of the most wonderful people. Partly because I think romance readers are so often subjected to shaming. We're not actually ashamed of the books that we read, but
sure.
We're told we ought to be feeling ashamed about the books we read, even
sure.
by people at the checkout counter at the bookstore. When you get that reception to the books that you're buying or checking out from the library, you internalize that. And when you find other people who love the same thing you do, there is this enormous squee of relief. Like, oh, I found all my people. Let's talk about all the things.
Right, right.
You know, there's every so often a study about how reading fiction makes you more empathetic. Romances are specifically about emotions and intimacy. Nora Roberts says they're the hat trick of easy targets because they're about relationships, emotions, and sex.
It also strikes me as a genre that's inherently hopeful.
Yes.
Because when you dive into read a romance, I mean, one of the things that people say to me when I talk about reading romances is, you know, the sort of, how can you read those when it's so obvious the stories are all the same because the people are going to get together? And I sort of always want to say, okay, but in the vast majority of mysteries, the detective is eventually going to solve the crime.
Mm-hmm.
And you're really just trying to get from point A to point B. And you may not know what the answer to the crime is going to be, but you know what the basic structure of the book is, which
mm-hmm.
is essentially the same thing in romance, except that in romance, when I read a romance, I find that it is a kind of, it is an act of optimism.
Absolutely.
Because you're diving into this story knowing that eventually there's going to be a rough version of a happy ending for people. Sometimes they have had setbacks along the way or losses. It's not uncommon to have something like somebody's grandma dies, and that's one of the ways they get to, you know, people become closer or whatever. And often they are people who have had other rough things happen to them there. They've had bad breakups and, you know, bad pasts or what have you. It is a kind of an optimistic thing to do, I think.
Absolutely, especially because what you're doing in a romance is you're working through conflict. These people are not together. They're going to be together at the end. How do they get there? One of the ways in which I describe the genre to people who are very unfamiliar with it is that frequently you hear that it's a formula, that it's all the same.
Yeah.
But if you think of it in terms of a document that has a structure, like, for example, say a legal brief. When you are writing a legal document, there are rules you have to follow. The front looks like this. The introduction looks like this. There's this format on the sides. These are the steps that you take to make this argument
mm-hmm.
that we should move this trial to this place or that we should be granted this motion. So the front and the end are going to be pretty standard.
Mm-hmm.
The argument that you make in the middle is as creative as you need it to be.
Right.
That's the romance. So the beginning is that there's going to be two people who are not together. And in the end, there's going to be people who are together, who are optimistically hopeful for a happy ever after. What happens in between the argument and the conflict and the resolution and the problems and the solutions, that's the good part.
Yeah. The other thing that I always tell people about romance readers that I think is so interesting is that I think romance readers have... I think they were and have been critical to the adoption of e-readers.
Oh, absolutely. I was introduced to the idea of the Kindle, the original Kindle that looked like a wedge that you used to keep the door open, by a romance editor who said, I have 500 books in my purse right now. And I was like, okay, hold the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Women have always actually been early adopters of technology. I remember going to a conference that now no longer exists called Tools of Change in Publishing, sponsored by O'Reilly Publishing, which does mostly technical and computer instruction. Instruction manuals and books about technology. During that conference in 2007 or 2008, I was on a panel about basically women and digital reading technology. And the whole point was, we are the readers that you are looking for. We are the people who buy a book, finish a book, buy another book. And of course, it being a convention of mostly men in technology, there was like five people in the room when we presented.
Sure.
Now you will see more and more people going, oh, well, we need to talk to the women who are reading.
Right. And I have noticed that as you go forward in time, they've kind of added different features. When you read a book on a Kindle, they'll offer you at the end, here's either the next book in this series or here's other books by this author, so that they're kind of trying to capture that part of romance reading that is kind of very habit driven and very almost ritual driven. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like the people who try to get you to buy books from whatever bookstore or seller it might be are getting better at figuring out how to use the technology to feed the habit.
Oh, absolutely.
A little bit.
Absolutely. And self-published authors are very skilled at that, too. There's a wonderful, wonderful author of historical and contemporary romances named Courtney Milan, who talks about how important the back matter of an ebook is. The first thing that you see after you finish the book.
Yeah.
And as she puts it, a reader is never going to love you more than they do at the moment that they've just finished your book.
That's true.
This is your opportunity. So she recommends, you know, sign up for my mailing list to find out when my next book is. Here is the series order in which you've been reading. Would you like the next book? Here is a link. The information that you want to give to a reader at the end, either whether you're the author or you're the retailer, is what else can I help you with?
Right.
What other book would you like?
Right. For people who are out there thinking, maybe I don't read romance, can you recommend something that's sort of out right now? I know that your entire philosophy of romance is that it's very individual to the person. But in terms of stuff that is out at the moment, happening right now, stuff that you think is really cool, a thing or two that you can recommend.
If you're in the mood for something very spicy, very erotic, and very emotional, there is a book by Alicia Rye called A Gentleman in the Street, which is about a man who has been raising his younger siblings, and his father is one of those people who had a lot of money and a lot of wives and forgot he had kids a lot of the time. And so this the hero has been responsible for his family. The heroine is about his age, and her mother and his father were married very briefly long, long ago. So for a very brief time, they were step-siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And so that has erected a boundary between them.
Sure.
She is extremely outrageous. She is extremely sexually liberated and sexually curious. And she has always had a thing for the hero. And the hero has tried very hard not to acknowledge any types of feelings on his part for her. So there's this internal conflict and there's external conflict, and it is seriously, seriously hot.
Okay.
If you like spicy, I don't know how spicy your audience is rolling here, but hey, you like spice?
So that's the three pepper.
That's three, four, maybe five peppers.
Like
a little pile.
What's like a good one or two pepper, if that's your speed?
One or two peppers. We talking like kissing and hand-holding and
that's about it?
Okay. Not a problem. Just One of the Guys by Kristen Higgins is an older title of hers, but it is my favorite. And it's one
I
love that book. It's one of my favorites to give to people who like comedy, who like intelligent people, who like grown-up stories.
Yeah.
Not stories about really inept or incompetent people, but grown-ups who are trying to figure out their lives, who are perfectly normal and enjoyable humans. And
I love
very
that book.
Funny. I love that
book. I think it's two peppers. I think it has a little more than kissing and hand-holding, but it's not explicit. Her stuff is never very like...
Never.
Her stuff is always right around that two pepper area.
And if you like mysteries, like if you're a mystery
reader,
there's a lot of overlap between mystery and romance. So, for example, historical mysteries, there's Deanna Raiborne's series, begins with Silent in the Grave. And that follows the same two characters through several books. And I believe those are Victorian, but don't quote me on that. If you like contemporary romances with a seriously intense romantic thread, this series is still ongoing, and the couple has never reached a point where I believe that they are happy. There is still conflict. Mm-hmm. But the Russ Van Alstyne Claire Ferguson series by Julia Spencer Fleming begins with a book called In the Bleak Midwinter. It takes place in a town in upstate New York. The hero is the chief of police. He grew up in the town. The heroine is younger than he is. She's a former Army helicopter pilot and has been ordained as an Episcopal priest and has been hired to take over the Episcopal parish of that town. And they meet when someone abandons a baby on the steps of the porch,
or on
the steps of the church, and she brings the baby to the hospital and he has to go because crime. And they meet and they find that they are drawn to each other in a way that's very intellectual and very personal. And they have a very shared experience despite being very, very different. He is married and she is a priest, not a celibate priest, but she has a sort of social expectation of conduct that comes with her job. And so the conflicts between them are difficult and each one is a really, really good mystery.
Well, this is a very good set of recommendations. We appreciate it. We appreciate it so much. And I am sure that I will run off and read some of them. Full episodes of Pop Culture Happy Hour are available every Friday at iTunes or your favorite podcast provider or at npr.org. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you for having me.